The agenda of the meeting was circulated, and I want to believe that you all have a copy of the agenda in front of you, which will then be used to guide the meeting. Shall we close our eyes and observe a moment of silence for prayer and meditation? Amen. Good morning, honourable members. Good morning to the Parliamentary Budget Office. And I'd like to also greet the hard-working staff and all guests present in this meeting. I wish to welcome you all to this very important meeting. It is a meeting where we will be receiving a briefing from the Parliamentary Budget Office on the electricity generation technology choice, costs and considerations. This meeting comes as a response to the committee resolution following the PBO submission in the 2015 medium-term budget policy statement hearings on the 28th of October 2015, during which the PBO was tasked with looking into the feasibility of various options for electricity generation technology choices. Honourable members, as you are aware, an adequate and reliable supply of electricity is essential for economic growth and development. And presently, we are about economic growth and development of this country. And any choice that we take should talk to this, and it should be a quality choice that will take the economic growth and development to new heights. We also know that South Africa will add additional electricity generation capacity to meet both the future demands and replace its fleet. Thus, it is critical that the technology mix chosen is optimal in terms of the effect on public finances and overall socio-economic development. The 2016 budget review indicated that reforms underway in the energy sector should lead to the development of a vibrant, diversified and competitive electricity sector, which will change the supply mix, expand private participation and ensure robust and flexible supply. Now, again, I would like to reiterate that the principles of efficiency, value for money and effectiveness apply just the same for electricity generation as well, just like they apply to all other areas of government expenditure. So let us have a fruitful engagement on this very important briefing. Welcome once more. Please feel free. This is not our meeting. It is our meeting. Not the committee's meeting. It is our meeting. So let's feel free and participate freely so that we can have fruitful deliberations. Thank you very much. We will then move on to the next item of the agenda, which is presentation by Parliamentary Budget Office. Sorry, I've skipped apologies. Are there any apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members. We have three apologies today. First apologies from Honourable Sheikh Imam, and then the second one is from Honourable Nogonyane, and the third one is from Honourable McLachlan.
Honourable members, we take note of the apologies. Shall we then move on to the next item, which is presentation by Parliamentary Budget Office. I would like to hand over to you, Doctor.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present to this AUKUS committee and honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, colleagues. Chair, I think you've summed up quite correctly the importance of infrastructure development and electricity. as an essential part of economic growth and development. This report was presented as you or developed as a result of this committee's request to the PBO in considering choices between the different energy mixes and also the cost. And just to point out here in terms of adding to your presentation and your introduction is that most of the recent statistics we use have come from the Electric Power Research Institute 2015 and other statistical data that we've utilized as well. So Chair, without any further ado, I will ask my colleagues to start the presentation. Take your honourable members.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members. We're all quite familiar and aware of the fact that South Africa needs to add electricity generation capacity to its current installed capacity. As Chairperson correctly pointed out in her introduction, that adequate electricity supply is essential for economic growth. There's a strong relationship between growth in electricity. All countries in the world that grow on the back of energy, and electricity is a fundamental component to enable that growth. What we have over here is some calculations that TBO did on the electricity intensity of economic growth for a range of countries. On the left-hand side, you'll see a range of developed countries, and the right-hand side, some comparative developing countries, along with Africa and the very end. What this shows is, as countries grow, the level of electricity demanded actually changes over time. So when a country is moving from being quite rural and agrarian towards being industrialized, a lot more electricity is demanded for a per unit of economic growth. But as countries are already advanced, everybody has electricity and radios and TVs and industries are functioning, if countries' demand for electricity actually slows down relative to the level of economic growth. So if you look at Japan, Sweden, and the UK, we've actually seen negative electricity intensity of growth over a period of time, which is a very interesting observation. Why this is important for us as Africa is, if we look at us in three different periods of 10 years, our electricity intensity of growth actually declined over time, which means for every unit of growth in the economy, the amount of electricity required for that growth has actually declined, which is important when you're planning for electricity demand in the future. The last bar for South Africa, 2002-2011, is actually quite low. It's below 0.5. That, I think, is important for members to bear in mind. It's also as a result of electricity supply constraints. So it wasn't, had our supply been a bit better, you would have seen a slightly higher number. And I think it's important to bear that in mind. We mentioned the importance of planning for electricity. So many countries in the world, including South Africa, engage in energy planning. So electricity isn't like other resources where you can just, you know, just add it over a short period of time. Electricity plans is a long time to build. So when you need more electricity in the future, you actually have to plan for your future needs. You can't really just go into a shop and buy a new, you know, generator or something of the sort for the country. So we take, most countries within South Africa take a long-term view for energy planning. So energy planning is important, and some of its outcomes are to ensure affordable electricity infrastructure. If electricity is very expensive, it obviously increases the cost of living, it increases the cost of business, it's inflationary. I think it's important to bear that in mind. In addition to that, energy planning is important because it ensures electricity is affordable for business and households. It maintains a responsive electricity system. By this we mean the electricity system takes into consideration the future demands of the country, of households, of citizens. The environmental objectives that need to be met using energy planning, this has become quite important over the past 10 to 15 years with the increase in global warming and global commitment to reduce carbon emissions. And electricity, especially in South Africa, is particularly high in terms of carbon emissions. We also have industrial policy objectives that energy planning seeks to achieve. This can mean directly in trying to reduce energy costs or maintain low increase in costs, as Africa did in the 1990s for industrial policy objectives. And further to that, you also have regional development objectives. So many countries trade electricity with each other. A well-known case is the Germans import a lot of their electricity from France. South Africa currently imports from Mozambique and from Lesotho. So there are regional integration objectives that also come into this. The point of view of energy planning is not just about low cost. There are many other objectives that countries try and achieve through energy planning. Implications for before the Standing Committee on Appropriations, as well as legislatures more generally, is that these considerations pull in different directions. So if you want to ensure affordable electricity, you're trying to maybe maintain modest increases in electricity costs. On the other hand, if you're trying to pursue environmental objectives, more often than not, low carbon emitting electricity infrastructure is more expensive. And so these dynamics pull in different directions, and it's important for policymakers to have a full view of the different implications from these considerations. So that's quite a challenging job to try and determine what's the optimal mix. South Africa, there's just a few words on energy choices in Africa. So we mentioned that Africa is in the process of adding new generation capacity. Overinvestment pre-1994 and a lack of investment in the initial decade and a half post-1994 have had major implications for energy in this country. Consequently, which means because we never had to invest in new infrastructure, energy prices weren't particularly high in South Africa. When energy prices were low in South Africa compared to other parts of the world, this incentivized an energy-intensive industrial base. So we had aluminium smelters coming on, we had Mittal Steel, formerly known as Sisal, we had BHP's big smelter in Richards Bay, and these are some examples of industry that developed quite rapidly with low energy prices. So you have a lot of capacity in the early 90s, and you have increasing demand from 1994 onwards. Part of this increasing demand was South Africa's social policies, where we electrified a lot of households, we increased the supply of electricity to households and industry, we had massive urbanization, and so consequently you have a lot of a very sudden, very rapid increase in electricity demand. What this graph shows over here is precisely the increase in electricity demand. The very dark line right at the top gives us total electricity consumed. So it, and that's in an index form, so it's actually showing you the actual increase. And so if you see from 1994 to about 2005-2006, it's a very rapid increase in total energy, energy demand in this country. It slows down thereafter, and then it comes to slow down a bit. But what you also have is, if you look at the grey line, beneath the grey line, is real electricity tariff increases. Right? So electricity tariffs didn't increase for a lot of the early 90s and the mid-90s up until the early 2000s. And then the economy continued to perform quite well over this period. Energy increases, energy demand increases quite rapidly, but not so tariffs. It's important to bear this in mind, because come 2008, because of a lack of investment, and on one hand, resulting in supply being limited, and massive demand on the other side, you have, we all believe, with the load shedding took place in 2008-2009, and that's primarily because supply wasn't able to meet demand. I think the response to this massive new investment, the known examples are with agency Maduki and Sile. Our significant coal investment started in 2007. In addition to that, we have the renewable energy program. We have four windows already, and this adds significant capacities to South Africa's already installed capacity. And then you have some pump storage and some smaller plants, and then you also have some refurbishing. South Africa is trying to increase its electricity supply and its capacity, and this is very important. This is a little too late to meet the current demand, but it's an important step in our development. So energy technology choice in South Africa, most of that we started investing, is actually informed by the Integrated Resource Plan. The Integrated Resource Plan is a plan that South Africa puts together, like many other countries, to plan for future electricity capacity requirements. We've noticed earlier on that electricity supply can't just be turned on and turned off by buying new plants overnight. It takes a long time to construct these plans. These plans are based on assumptions and forecasts of future energy demand. Like all forecasts, including economic forecasts, these forecasts are invariably challenging to actually project, and they're very uncertain. So countries update their forecasts on a very regular basis. Africa's most recently adopted, or the current IRP is the one in 2010. It takes into consideration Africa's different policy challenges, our expectations, and our commitments to reducing carbon emissions, the South African economy, and it makes certain assumptions about future growth and about energy costs. And then it comes up with a different scenarios. on what energy demand will be and how we meet the energy demand with a range of different technologies. In addition to the integrated resources plan, South Africa's energy choice is also determined by ministerial determinations. So through an act of parliament, the minister is allowed to determine certain technologies that the country needs to invest in based on consultation with the National Energy Regulator, known as NERSA. Now, we have a pretty decent, pretty strong framework with IRP to plan future energy demand. And we also have, at the same time, since 2010, when the last IRP was adopted, we have significant development affecting the South African economy. These included relatively slow growth. So since 2008, 2009, after the global financial crisis, all economies in the world, including the African economy, slowed down significantly. So if you look at those three lines of it, in the very top line is the IRP's high growth scenario. So this is what the IRP thought the African economy would grow as if it was growing quite fast. And this is also the middle green line is the IRP's low growth scenario. The IRP 2010's low growth scenario for the South African economy. So South African energy planners through the IRP, which was later adopted in 2010, expect South African economy to grow quite fast, quite rapidly over the period. As in reality, the South African economy grew a lot slower. Now, slow growth obviously means lower energy demand. Right now, we have lower energy demand. So what this suggests is that a lot of the expectations, forecasts and assumptions that went into the IRP 2010 have not played out, have not panned out, and this is not over any forecast. The implication then for this is that we need to update this, and the Department of Energy intends to table the next IRP sometime soon. It's supposed to be earlier this year, now we've been told it will be moved to later this year. Because if you're panning on incorrect assumptions, then obviously your suggestions and your recommendations as energy planners are not going to be the most accurate. So with the underperformance of growth rates to forecast, we also have actual energy demand in South Africa being a lot lower than was expected and than was forecasted. So what this graph shows you are different scenarios. So high growth scenarios, low growth scenarios, ESCOM's demand for electricity demand for 2020, 2015. Now, if you look at the bottom green line, that's the actual electricity demand for 2010 to 2015, which is significantly lower than what was forecasted. Implication, again, then, for this is that what we need to invest in terms of the scale, and which then implies the technology, would obviously need to be updated and adapted from our current plan. Since the 2010 IRP, there have been, in addition to lower growth, and lower energy demand, there have been some other important developments in the South African economy and in global energy, more broadly speaking, that have implications for energy choice in this country. One is energy technology cost and efficiency have changed. Everybody's well aware of that technology is never constant, it's always changing. One of the implications for energy is that technology costs have changed, particularly renewable energy costs have come down quite significantly. We have new numbers that provide estimates of basic technologies such as nuclear, coal, and gas, and these have also changed. So in our energy planning, we also need to take into consideration the change in costs. The price and availability of fuels has changed quite a bit as well. The most notable case in the cost of global oil, which also has affected gas prices. So oil and gas have changed significantly over the past 3 to 4 years. South Africa has a lot more recent experience with large energy generation projects, both public and private. So the public cases are well known in the Dube and Kusile, both of which have actually exceeded their initial time and cost estimates and are ongoing. At the same time, we also have some private sector initiatives in the energy space in South Africa, which have actually formed relatively well. Sasol erected two gas-powered stations, one in Sasolburg and one in Secunda, and these have been done in a pretty short space of time, and there have been, so obviously, a lot of renewable energy projects. Why this is important for us as a country indicates that when it comes to smaller projects, the lead times have been more modest compared to larger projects and different delay and assumptions around costs. Energy intensive sectors in South Africa, like mining, like in manufacturing, over the past 5 to 6 years have grown quite slowly, and their energy demand has grown more slowly. This is for two reasons. One is the sectors aren't performing particularly well, and secondly, many sectors have actually invested in energy efficient technologies, which means that they need to spend less money on electricity, increasing their, decreasing their overheads. Another important consideration for the legislature is Eskom's finances have deteriorated. So having to take on a lot more debt and having not had such strong revenue growth, in part because of regulatory decisions, Eskom's position right now is not as strong as it was, say, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago. And this is important to bear in mind. On a national level, South Africa has grown a lot more slower than it did in the previous decade or the previous 5 years. South Africa's debt is quite high. Rising national debt has increased, as well as the state's guarantees to SOEs have also increased. Implication then, with higher debt and more guarantees issued to debt entities, is that the state's ability or room to issue more debt and guarantees is actually a lot more constrained than it was 5 or 6 years ago. And in addition to that, compounding this challenge is the country's credit ratings have worsened and its borrowing costs have increased over time. Sorry about that confusion. The PBO study, this is the study we put together in response to the request from this committee. We look at several, there are obviously several international organizations and studies that try and compare the cost of different technologies, so gas, renewables, nuclear, hydro, and the like. However, there's a lot of challenges in using international studies because the cost of producing nuclear in France versus China versus Africa varies quite drastically. Country specifics and dynamics play a big role. Who owns technology actually plays a big role in our bargaining power. So what we've opted to do is take a more prudent approach by using country-specific estimates in our work that take into consideration local factors, making these estimates a lot more accurate. So our study goes as Prof indicated earlier on from 4 main sources. One is the IRP 2010, which is the current integrated resource plan of the country. The second is the IRP update from 2013, which wasn't updated but provides us with some useful cost estimates. And lastly, the ECRI, so that's the Electric Power Research Institute's estimate from 2015. And what kind of technologies to consider in this study? Now, obviously, countries have a wide range of technologies they could potentially use. We use technologies that South Africa has been considering for some time, primarily from the IRP, and we compare these technology costs over time to provide useful indicators of how costs have increased over time. So this is primarily, given South Africa has a significant coal stocks, this draws primarily on coal. South Africa has nuclear capabilities. Then we've also introduced some gas, or considering gas, renewables including wind, solar, and biomass, and lastly some hydro technology. Just a note on the hydro technology, our hydro technology cost estimates are from the IRP and not from the EPRI studies, and this is because EPRI studies don't include hydro in the two most recent iterations. Let's move on to costs. So to ensure stable and healthy public finances to promote economic growth, it's critical that consideration of electricity generation technology, there's very careful consideration of the costs of a range of technologies available to meet the country's needs. So, you know, when you're trying to make a decision, you look at what's the decision that's best for the country, you look at a wide range of potential technologies with a strong emphasis on cost. The technology mix, like the composition you have between coal, nuclear, gas, renewables, and the like, should first and foremost, as you mentioned earlier on, try and meet the country's electricity needs. And secondly, and this is quite important for an appropriations committee, try and efficiently allocate resources, public resources, which by definition are quite scarce. This requires lowest cost technically viable option more often than not. and must compare costs across different technologies. Now, when we try to compare technologies or costs across different technologies, it's necessary to standardize costs. So by standardizing, we mean how do we present these costs so that such that they are comparable. So if you're trying to build a huge nuclear coal-powered station, which is quite big, it may be, you know, 1 or 2 gigawatts in terms of size, you can't compare that as is just to a normal wind plant, solar plant, or small little gas plant. So you have to put them in a scale where you can actually compare them. So in comparing different technologies, it's critical that we standardize costs. So there are two typically used methods or metrics to compare costs. One is overnight capital costs, and the other is the LCOE, which you'll see a lot in presentations of energy experts, by ESCOM, by different engineers, both in South Africa and abroad. This is kind of the gold standard, if you like, for comparing energy costs in different countries. Both of these have merits, and at the same time, both of these have limitations. So a discussion on overnight capital costs. So an overnight capital cost, as the name indicates, is a common measure to compare different electricity generation technologies using the capital cost, the cost of constructing the station. Capital costs are presented, you know, what does it cost to set up a coal power station, what does it cost to set up a coal power station that emits less carbon dioxide, and the like. So how this is estimated by engineers and energy experts is total estimated cost of comparing the of constructing the technology is divided by the total capacity of the particular plant. So plants are given particular ratings depending on how much of energy they can generate at any particular point in time, and that's referred to as capacity. It's expressed in either more often than not in kilowatts. Sometimes a very big plant is expressed in gigawatts. So total cost divided by the size of the plant in kilowatts, and that gives you the RAM cost per kilowatt of capacity. This is also known as overnight capital cost, primarily because this cost estimate doesn't take into consideration financing costs and cost escalation. So if you want to set up a huge plant and you're South Korea, and you go to the market to issue debt, the cost for you to construct a plant in South Korea will be a lot less than, for instance, a country like Argentina or Brazil, given the comparison. So this is the cost of constructing, but then into consideration the financing cost. It's important to note over here the financing costs can actually change over time, and this is a function of many different metrics, including the country's credit ratings and growth outlook and growth performance and revenue as well. So the overhead capital cost is a very simple way to compare different technologies. It's very useful, very intuitive, and it presents the first hurdle of sorts. So if you can't afford the cost, the overhead capital cost, then you can't afford the technology. It's important to bear that in mind. At the same time, it has some limitations. It doesn't take into consideration other costs, such as financing costs, which you've noted, the plant life. So if you have two particular plants, one plant can last 10 years, one plant has the potential to last 40 or 50 years, the capital cost doesn't give us the effect of that in its estimation, and that's a significant limitation. Similarly, it doesn't take into consideration plant load factor. So if you have a plant, and that plant is running, say, 80% of the time, it generates a lot more electricity. So the total electricity the plant generates divided by its capital cost gives you a far more favorable, capital cost divided by the total energy generates over its life gives you a far more favorable outcome when plants are being used a lot. And so again, plant load factors vary by country and it varies by different estimates. The overnight capital cost doesn't consider operation and maintenance costs. These can vary quite a bit. For technologies like coal, gas is quite high. For other technologies, it's a lot lower, as well as fuel costs. So gas and coal stations have very high fuel costs. Nuclear and renewables have no fuel costs. And the bottom line to bear in mind over here is that this is not the be-all and end-all in terms of cost. It's not a fully cost-effective estimate, but it's something useful nonetheless. The other, which I mentioned, is sort of the gold standard, is known as the levelized cost of electricity. And you'll see people talking about this, comparing it. It's an alternate measure of the overall competitiveness of different technologies, very important when you're comparing different technologies. So strictly speaking, it's defined as the current cost of producing 1 kilowatt hour of electricity from any given source. So this allows us to compare across different sources, like the other costs we discussed. And it's the average price at which electricity must be sold in order to cover the full cost of production of the plant. Right? So how much do we need to sell, you know, 1 kilowatt hour or 1 megawatt hour of gas technology or coal technology for that technology to break even? So you have the full cost. And so to determine the LCOH, how we refer to it in literature, it's the total cost of building an electricity generator is first calculated by accounting for the projected capital cost, the fuel cost, the fixed and variable operations and maintenance costs, its financing costs, and the assumed utilization rates. So how much of the time is this technology going to run? And so we standardize that. So each cost component has been adjusted for inflation, that's to the current price, and divided by the total energy output. And so it's a very useful comparison of different costs. So having outlined the capital costs as well as the LCOE, my cost Brandon is going to take us through some of the cost estimates that we included in the study from expert sources.
As yourself pointed out, I'm going to take you through some of our cost estimates. I understand they're quite technical, but these are the two measures that we've used to compare the various technologies. So I'll take you through that firstly. And then I will set out some of the considerations in choosing the energy generation option, which I've already alluded to some of them. I'll go into a little bit more detail, after which I'll ask you. So the following two graphs show capital cost estimates for both conventional, so that's conventional over there, and renewable technologies in function 2015 prices. The first thing to note is that the most recent cost estimates, so your dark green bar, that's for FE 2015, are significantly higher than the previous estimates, and all the studies really highlight the necessity of the country to update its electricity generation needs, as well as alluded to. As you can see with the range of conventional technologies, the nuclear energy is the most expensive. It's actually 15% more than the most expensive coal option, that's coal 4, and 57% more expensive than the most expensive gas option, which is gas 2. As you can see on an overnight capital cost basis, once again, renewable technologies, with the exception of wind and hydro, are generally more expensive than conventional technologies. Gas technology is the cheapest across both conventional and renewable energy options, followed by hydro and coal 1 and 3. So these next two figures are going to show you our second major metric that we look at, which is LCOE, as Richard spoke about. Here you will see the different estimates for the base loads and intermediate technologies from the IRP update, the EFI 2012 and 2015 study. And again, these are in constant 2015 prices. The IRP 2010 did not present LCOE for all of the technologies considered, which is why we have included it in this graph. As you can see, with the exception of gas technology, all the LCOEs are high in real terms and these are the estimates, so similar story to overnight capital costs. On an LCOE basis, hydro, gas 1 and coal 1 are actually the cheapest options across conventional renewable technologies. According to the 2015 study, nuclear technology and coal 4 are the most expensive conventional technologies that we looked at. But again, renewable technologies are on average more expensive than conventional technology. So turning to some of the considerations, this slide deals with some of the trade-offs of choosing an energy generation option and considers the implications of those choices. So when you do not opt for the lowest cost option, it generally entails spending additional scarce resources than would otherwise have been necessary if you were to simply meet the country's base electricity needs. This may be necessary if we want to realize other policy goals such as reducing carbon emissions, developing local industrial capabilities. But it's important to realize that the additional costs obviously need to be weighed up against the potential benefits arising from the country. This is something which I've alluded to. The country incurs costs for more expensive technology through two main channels. Firstly, the increase in average electricity tariffs is usually directly proportional to the cost of producing electricity. So if you increase your capital and your fuel expenditure and your operating and maintenance expenditure, you can expect that to have an impact on tariffs or tariffs over time. High electricity tariffs may reduce overall economic activity and national revenue, which has obviously an impact on households if they're spending, and businesses are also impacted because their input costs increase, and this can erode competitiveness. So that just gives you a sense of the trade-offs in pursuing a option that marks the lowest cost, for example. Lower growth in revenue reduce the fiscal room available to, for the states to meet important social and economic goals. The second major avenue through which pursuing a non-low-cost option can impact the state is in the case of SOEs, such as Eskom, for example. They often require support in the form of loans, guarantees for dealing with Eskom. And while these measures are important and necessary to lower financing costs for the SOE, it can worsen the country's balance sheet. So in South Africa, for example, where you have all these contingent liabilities or guarantees on the balance sheet. And all this really does is impact credit ratings. It has an impact on our capacity to borrow in the future because, of course, these contingent liabilities remain on the balance sheet until they are exercised at some point, assuming they are or not. Okay, carbon emission considerations. The energy sector is responsible at the moment for around two-thirds of global greenhouse gases. So when technology involves some sort of fossil fuel, we obviously get the emissions of harmful pollutants feeding carbon dioxide, and this can obviously cause harm to humans and contribute to climate change. Now, South Africa has made several commitments to reducing its CO2 emissions. What's critical here is that choosing the appropriate policy instrument to achieve this, as well as the timing of when that instrument is introduced, is critical. And this is particularly given the country's high level of CO2 emissions and current low growth output. So such instruments should provide incentives for carbon intensity reduction and through encouraging investments in energy saving measures, while at the same time being sensitive to the impact that they would have on the local economy. So an example of this would be National Treasury's introduction of the carbon tax in 2013. That's just one policy instrument. There are several others that incentivize businesses to spend on energy efficient or energy saving options. So there's a range of instruments at the moment that have been introduced. The domestic electricity sector generates most of its output from coal-fired power stations. So fairly significant proportion of our electricity generating technologies are highly carbon emitting. So the plan would obviously be to reduce those carbon emissions from evaluating our current energy mix. So this you might see the introduction of renewables, for example, other low carbon emitting options. The carbon emissions of different technologies can be compared based on CO2 emissions per kilowatt hour of electricity generated. So what this does effectively, it reflects the total amount of carbon dioxide that the plant is producing over its life, given the electricity the plant can actually produce. This figure here shows you exactly that. On the y-axis you'll see your net large cost of electricity, and the x-axis the CO2 emissions. And what you can see there is that hydro, nuclear, and renewable technologies have virtually no CO2 emissions at all, while technologies such as coal and biomass have comparatively high emissions. Again, cleaner technologies are generally more expensive. Even with the introduction of carbon capture and storage for coal stations, reducing CO2 emissions, we've had some success there, but not to the extent where it's comparable to hydro, nuclear, or renewables. So, given the apparent trade-off between costs and carbon emissions, it's important for members to consider these impacts, particularly with regards to finance and the additional costs of cleaner technologies. Okay, so uncertainty over future electricity demand requires an adaptable capacity expansion plan, which I was again alluding to earlier. So, if you're investing capacity based on the expectation of high demand in the future, this presents the risk of overinvestment. So overinvesting results in higher than necessary electricity tariffs over because you're still going to have to pay for that plant in the future, despite the fact that you're excess capacity. In this sense, you might say that a kind of lumpy investment is a significant capital investment up front, lacks that sort of flexibility because you're locked in for a certain amount of time. So these risks can be reduced by adopting more flexible to ensuring that future supply matches demand. And this potentially entails investing in smaller plants with shorter construction lead times. That generally, this approach is often referred to as a modular approach, so we have small tranches of investment and generation technology. Of the technologies that we considered, the construction times that were shortest were for gas, wind, solar, and biomass. So those particular technologies would potentially offer some flexibility benefits over the traditional baseload technologies. Okay, a final factor to consider is localization. So obviously when you add electricity capacity, you're talking about a significant capital investment. What does it give the domestic economy the opportunity to benefit from increased demand for a range of products and services required to construct, operate, and maintain power stations, as well as any related infrastructure? So in an industrialized economy such as Africa, we've got well-established sectors, so construction, manufacturing, for example, steel industries. It's likely that a significant share of the inputs and services needed to roll out a technology, an energy-generating technology, would actually be sourced locally. However, this is not always the case. Sometimes there are inputs that are likely to be sourced from outside of the country. This may be because you don't have particular expertise or specialized skills. On the other hand, foreign inputs could be cheaper at that point in time. So I think opting for the lowest cost inputs from domestic or foreign suppliers is necessary to ensure the lowest impact on overall tariffs and public finances. But again, there is another trade-off here. Countries are obviously not only concerned with minimizing costs, statistics in the short run. Often these projects are used as large public procurement opportunities to stimulate domestic demand and to develop local capabilities in industries. So developing local capabilities can allow for the emergence of new industries and linkages, and this has the potential to lead to an overall increase in growth and employment. So, in conclusion, South Africa will likely add additional electricity generation capacity in the next few years. Since the 2010 IRP, economic growth and electricity demand have been much lower than assumed. This necessitates an adjustment to the country's electricity generation capacity plans and careful consideration over any new procurement. These considerations come at a time when the country faces a particularly challenging economic situation. It is therefore critical that the technology mix chosen is optimal in terms of the effects on both public finances and growth, and that's the balancing act within the industry. This study compares overnight capital costs of EVs for a range of technologies in the industry. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for the presentation. Honourable members, you were listening to this briefing. A bit technical, I must say, but the manner the briefing was done, we tried to simplify it for us. And I would like the honourable members to reflect on this presentation and rise on clarity-seeking questions. Thank you very much. Honourable member, if you could also introduce yourself. Sorry for that.
Thank you, Chair. Gordon Mackay, I'm part of the Energy Portfolio Committee, so obviously we have a specific interest in on this document, specifically around nuclear costs. Chair, I have a few questions, obviously more from an energy policy perspective, so I hope you will allow me to put in some of these questions, but I think it's relevant to the conversation at hand. First and foremost, I just wanted to question there's a lot of information in the public domain currently around the cost of nuclear. They haven't actually given us an overall this is paying, how much we're going to be paying, which is very difficult for us policymakers to assess. I mean, you've discussed the last costs, et cetera, et cetera. But for example, Eskom and the Department of Energy have made very specific statements around nuclear costing us between approximately 600 million rand. We've heard costs as high as 1.7 billion rand, and the figures are so diverse and varying that we're really not quite sure what we're hearing. So I would have been quite interested to understand what your final calculation was and how that compares to comparative studies in the marketplace. Obviously, UCT's done a study, Chris Hillen's done a study, Eskom has made decisions but not actually provide us with the assumptions that can't really tell. So from that perspective, that would be incredibly helpful. And you made some very interesting statements about gas. Again, in contrast to your statements on the levelized costs on gas, is the McKinsey report, which indicates that the capital costs of gas are far lower than the forms of technology, but the levelized costs are higher considering the long-term tracking of the gas price. Also, I just wanted to clarify, in terms of your calculations with regard to gas, South Africa has very limited gas infrastructure. So in terms of your assumptions, where are we going to get the gas from, how are we going to import it into South Africa, how are we going to utilize it, are those costs included in your cost assessments? Because fundamentally, those gas costs seem very, very, very low assumptions that you're using. I'm also just wondering if you guys have looked at the NDP. You are aware that in terms of NDP, there's a very specific figure around what the cost of nuclear should be. If it goes above that, we shouldn't be considering it. I wonder if you could highlight that for the committee, what states in NDP and what your calculations say with regards to NDP, obviously noting that this government is supposed to be implementing NDP. Also, one of the changes here is that the cost of technology is somewhat irrelevant in that the cost of that technology can be passed on to consumer. What we haven't seen as well from your report is what the expected impact on tariffs will be for the consumer in the medium and long term, which specifically affects our ability to grow as an economy. Obviously, it's noting the energy intensity of GDP growth in South Africa. Also, it seems like you weren't clear on your assumptions around whether that is because of a fundamental shift in the type of economic growth South Africa experiences, or was that due to load shedding, which fundamentally for us is very important to understand what can be attributed to where. Fundamentally, a lot of energy experts are saying South Africa's future growth, you know, we've moved to quite a modern economy, high financial services, et cetera, et cetera. So we just need some clarity. Also, in terms of the cost of tariffs and the impact of tariffs on electricity in South Africa, this is of fundamental importance to the industrialization program proposed by South Africa, specifically the ANC's proposals around localization of industry, in terms of mining, boosting high beneficiation, specifically beneficiation. Clearly, from what you're saying in terms of the cost of nuclear, if we go nuclear, we can't beneficiate. I mean, that's fundamentally what we're saying. And someone actually needs to make that critical point to government that if you go for beneficiation, you need the lowest cost input of electricity. If you go nuclear, you're going to go high cost, and therefore you won't be able to beneficiate. So fundamentally, it would be very helpful if your report clarified that very specific policy stance, because you're talking about policy sacrifices, but no one quite knows what they are, and we need quite clear statement. If we want nuclear, we can't have beneficiation. If we want beneficiation, we can't have nuclear. Okay, I just have one more question around your assessment of energy demand. I don't know if you saw Tim's presentation last week, but energy demand within the industrial sector is down 11% this year. Overall electricity demand is down 1%, and exports of electricity are up a massive 400-500% to a total of 0.5%. So what we're actually seeing is huge decline in energy demand in South Africa that's not being explained. Fundamentally, it has to offset against purchases of future nuclear, and fundamentally, so your assumptions around the coal power stations that will be going offline between 2020 and 2025, creating need for replacement capacity. Finally, the RP, obviously, is one document. The RP update will be out soon, but fundamentally, the key document in energy policy is the Integrated Energy Plan, which will go before Cabinet hopefully at the end of this year, which clearly indicates what the energy mix will be. So the Department of Energy determines the energy mix. Appropriations does not get to determine the energy mix of the country. Therefore, we have to be clear on assessing how the Department of Energy has actually assessed its costs and assumptions. So that document is available in draft form. I'm surprised I haven't seen it included in your research, because it really replaces the RP fundamentally in terms of assessing cost assumptions. You will see that the country is choosing nuclear quite boldly in the IEP, which pushes us very heavily into a nuclear zone, and those assumptions haven't been included in the report here as well. So fundamentally, I think a slight flaw, and something we probably need an update on. Thank you.
Any other clarification question, honourable member, Shopiswole, and Dr. Feek, and honourable member Lowe.
Thank you, very much attended, and thank you to the presenter. Obviously, this document is very technical, and myself is not a technocrat. I need to read it once again and apply my mind. But I just want to read to you something that I showed. GDP 3.3%, economy shows great resilience. Does that make any difference to you? Does that to our situation? Let's assume this continues to be the status quo. Would that make any difference to your presentation?
Yes, Honourable Chairperson, I put a few questions for clarification, but I also want to add to the previous because it's a good document, a lot of research and obviously a bit technical, so forgive me if I ask these clarity-seeking questions and I've just got a few statements to make. On page 5, slide 5, everybody. The introduction and planning talks about these affordability and meeting the country's objectives, etc. Now, the problem is that it's good to have something like that as on paper, but it's not actually happening. I mean, we all know that the electricity is not affordable. We also know that the cost of producing electricity is high for a number of reasons. We know that the country's environmental objectives are not being met and so forth. So how would this country, how do we meet those objectives? Because there's no solution. We, the Appropriations Committee, this document is brought here. I'm hoping that it's not brought here just for us to say, okay, it's been presented, so it's fine, it's gone through the Appropriations Committee so it can go to the next level. I think it's about time that this Appropriations Committee looks at documents like this and makes decisions and makes proposals to the next level. Other than that, we just sit here week in, week out, having a whole lot of presentations and paperwork, and at the end of the day, it just goes through. We get a nuclear power station which we cannot afford. We get a nuclear power station which doesn't meet the country's environmental objectives and so forth. So it's important that we make sure that what is presented here, we absorb it and we take action. And that's just the point I want to make as far as that is concerned. This is slide number 7. That is an interesting graph, and I'm sorry that I'm referring to this one which is black and white here, but I'm just going to try and remember when you presented it in color here. So we talk about the tariffs not going up in the same proportion to the costs. I'm not writing that here. So the point is that obviously in your costs you have fixed cost and you have a variable cost. So it might be that some costs are fixed. So it didn't necessarily mean that cost of the tariffs rather should increase with the cost. The tariffs should not increase with the cost. So my question then, did we not make use of economies of scale when the increase in demand for electricity was to place. Slide number 11. Let me just go to 8, sorry. I see there's some interesting information about the different power stations there with the capacity, etc. Now, what would be useful as well, because in your presentation, Rashad, you mentioned something about the cost per kilowatt hour. Now, from that information, we wouldn't be able to see that. We wouldn't, because there's no cost there. So it might be useful if we see the cost that of each power station with the capacity that it would be able to generate. And then in addition to that, we've got date of commencement, but we don't have, we've got the date that it's completed, but there isn't a date that it is planned to be complete. So again, in terms of efficiency, that would assist us in determining whether it was an efficient project. So I'll move on to slide number 11, and this is the one which indicates very low actual demand. So the demand was lower from 2010 to 20. Currently, the demand is lower, and obviously the growth that was predicted was not considered or proportional. So he has a technical question. I know we're supposed to be talking about finance, but it costs the country lots of money, loads of rand, in the costly economy, loads of rand. Load shedding, why then was it necessary for load shedding? Because if our plan was such that this is the growth, so we should obviously plan according to growth. So the production of electricity should be proportional to the growth. Why then did we have load shedding? Was it other factors that are not included in the stopping? Or in the analysis, I beg your pardon, I must be careful, not wanting to begin this out. You're just presenting us with the information that we need to hopefully make decisions. And that's what I'm saying. We need to make decisions. We don't just have this document presented and say, okay, fine, let's come through. Put it in a draw. Honorable Lowe said that yesterday. Slide number 16. Now, I see this, and again, it's a document you presented with costs. Now, there's always you can present us with costs. Sorry. No ways that cost can be presented to us. I'm cautious of not blaming yourself. But, I mean, a good capital budgeting technique is when you include all costs, because that's one of the causes of load shedding that was raised or mentioned, was that because there was no maintenance done on the equipment. So when is that included? Because surely when you budget for a project, it needs to be, all the costs need to be included. So by just getting half or maybe even a quarter of the cost, why then had that not been done, or when, at what stage does that become part of the planning? Slide number 18. Well, it's I see you've got a number of options here, the code 1, code 2, and I'm assuming that this is different technologies, that's the code 1, code 2. But the one that concerns, I think, most of the country is the cost of nuclear for a number of reasons. Well, sorry, the nuclear plant for a number of reasons. One of them, in this case, being the cost of it. We know it. I mean, everybody seems that it's just that small minority and small, the few beneficiaries that will support the nuclear power station. This country cannot afford nuclear power. You don't have to be a rocket scientist. We can do whatever analysis. If you look at the cost that has been thrown around for you, Ben, this country cannot. That's the one reason. The other reason is if you look at the disaster that could result in the event of anything going wrong with the nuclear power station, that's another reason why we should not accept the proposal of this nuclear power. So it's a good thing that it's here, and I'm hoping by this being seen by the decision makers, and I'm hoping, Honourable Chair, that the Appropriations Committee is one of them that will make that proposal, that the nuclear power station should not even be considered. Slide number 22, and there you stated clear. You've given us the advice, and we just need to heed to this. The slide that talks about financial and economic affordability, and again, now referring to the entire slide, and it's clear that this country has problems. We rely too much on debt. Our debt is increasing at a rapid rate, and in addition to that, our cost of debt is also increasing as a result of our credit rating, which, as much as we see, and I would like to just do a little more analysis of this 3.3% that Minister Patel was so excited about yesterday. I think there's more to it. I cannot believe it. That basically is a miracle. I mean, from a decrease in the first quarter to a negative 1.2% to a positive 3.3%, something just doesn't sound right to me. Nevertheless, we need to look into that. But the fact is that we are currently a country that is deep in debt, and we're getting deeper in debt because of all these SOEs, and this is one of them that's borrowing money on and increasing our debt to the lens that we cannot afford. And Honourable Chairperson, the last slide that I would like to refer to is the slide number 27. Okay, bottom line is I'm saying that the plan. We currently working with a 2010 plan, and Rashad indicated that we need to update the plan. But I believe that before we even spend one more cent on electricity on whatever decision, that plan needs to be updated. Because if we don't know the demand for our electricity, how can we start building power stations, nuclear power stations, how can we start spending money? Thank you.
Thank you very much for your intervention. The next on the list is Honourable Member Lowe, to be followed by Honourable Member Chwaraza, and Honourable Member Shopestola, do you want to have a second bite? Okay, after Mr. Chwaraza, in that order.
Thank you, Chair, and my apologies for being late. I'm still getting lost in Parliament after 2 years. It's unbelievable. But I did get lost, and my apologies for being late. I'm partly covered as well by my colleagues and some of my inputs that I wanted to make on the presentation. I want to also add my sentiments on the nuclear side of the presentation and its cost of this nuclear plant. And Dr. Fitz also alluded to it. I hope that this document is not a document that is coming to be presented to the committee with the hope that it must be understood by the committee and it must go forward. Like as is. On slide number 18 or page 18, there's a graph there on based on the nuclear costing and oil and coal and gas. And the nuclear is taking is right on top on the cost side. Will it make sense for us to venture into this nuclear plant? Stating that we are having currently a country where the SOEs are not stable, they can't manage their funding, they are forever on government bailouts, will it make sense to put the country in this much debt following that? We understand that the presenter, I think, has alluded to that yes, nuclear is a bit, it's cleaner energy and so forth. I don't know if am I presenting you correctly, but there was a statement like that. But would it make sense for us as a country to go into such amount of debt and facing also that are we ready as a country for a nuclear disaster? If the same accident of the Fukushima should happen in South Africa, are we ready for that? That's the question that we need to also ask ourselves going into this nuclear and that the country are so adamant to build. Then also, I think, I don't know, I may be missed it because I was a bit late. In your presentation, did you make any research as to compare to the cost of coal, the cost of solar, wind, and all of the whole energy mix of South Africa? How much does that cost a country annually? I don't know if you make any research of that. If you don't have it now, if you can please finish the research with that information. I think that was all for me, Chair, because Dr. Fick and my previous colleagues have covered me.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Over to Honourable Member Chwaraza.
Yeah, Chairperson. Honourable Lowe must not feel guilty for being lost to find this place. This slaughterhouse, Chairperson, is not known to many in this Parliament. If anybody is interested to know why this place is called the slaughterhouse, I can explain that. Chairperson, I must admit I'm thoroughly confused. One moment I hear something that says coal number this nuclear debt, I'm
most expensive. The other moment I hear that greener energy technologies are more expensive. So if you could explain that in very simple terms, what is more expensive between the gas emitting energy technologies and the cleaner energies? In very simple terms. Differentiate also between the construction of these technologies, the cost of construction of these technologies, and the cost of supply and maintenance. Because part of what you also referred to in this more detailed document, you are talking to increase in tariffs, and my sense is that probably governments may not charge consumers, whether business or households, for the construction, certainly for the supply and maintenance. So let's clear this tariff thing so that it does not conflate the cost. The last thing that I would like to comment about is this repeated blind condemnation of nuclear energy. Talk of nuclear, somebody will simply say, no, I'm simply shutting my mind, we don't want that. Too expensive, too dangerous. Now, admittedly, given the current economic environment, it is true that we may not venture into immediate building of that nuclear energy field. We can't afford it at this point. But there may come a point in the future where we could afford it. And therefore, we must keep open mind and not simply reject and reject and reject. Because other research have argued that whilst a nuclear plant, of course depending on the size and the amount of electricity you want to source from it, may be costly at the time of its construction. It has the potential of doing two things. The first is that it lasts between 80 and 100 years before you can even begin to think of its maintenance. Secondly, nuclear provides cheaper energy compared to all of these others. And the third thing, of course, is it's clean. How many of you said, even our solar and hydro, solar and wind that we've put into the picture now, might cost us $3 trillion rand in 20 years, when the nuclear plant will cost us 1 trillion rand, of course depending, as I said, on size and the amount of energy, 1 trillion rand to construct. But it will last longer and cheaper to maintain. And they add that this wind and solar would be obsolete in 20 years. Compared to the 80 to 100 years we might have time spent without spending, probably with spending very little on nuclear. But yeah, I want to make this point as well that this cry about the danger of nuclear, fair, it's a fair comment, it's understandable. But we must also understand that technologies develop and improve all the time. Scientists grow new techniques, new ideas all the time. So we cannot even anticipate a nuclear disaster and then freeze ourselves in not thinking positively on the nuclear energy. But the last point is this, that we must be careful not to speak on behalf of others who are not in South Africa. Think of the Iran story. Let me end it there.
Well, thank you for your intervention. The next, what I remember is only remember Shoppers story.
Thank you very much, Chapter. I just want to assure Honorable Lowe that you see this name of slaughter, a slaughter room, it is a slaughter room. But what is more, this committee is a slaughter committee. There is nothing like rubber standing in this country because we read. And I think you can attest to the articles that I sent you. But we don't just read things, we read and research and communicate. That is the nature of the appropriation process. Nothing will be rubber set. I must thank my neighbor, you know, he's always a good neighbor to me, for actually saying to you, asking you this question, that have you left out other points, other facts in your research. You know, immediately he said that, I said, hey, thank you very much. It reminds me of my favorite Professor Joseph Hickley and Professor Kajun Chan. When they reminded us that the problem of today, the crisis that we are in, is the fact that we have removed, the economists have removed history from economies. So I think you have left out history, because I only started using electricity in 1994. It's a very important factor to put in. I started using electricity. I was sleeping all the time with a candle and cooking on the floor, which actually takes a lot of your time as a person, retarding your development. I had to spend sleepless nights. After 1994, I'm still studying up to now. That is why I'm still studying. And when you present issues of electricity, don't forget the history. 90% of the population of South Africa suffered in darkness for ages. It was difficult for them to develop, to compete with our own in our own country. You know, Dr. C, if I had had electricity, I would be hearing such doctrines the way I read. So thank you very much for reminding me. Put you saying that, it will make more sense. I think as a country, we need, for the sake of South Africa, we need a little bit to lessen negativity. We are in an economic space in the West that is has no room for play. We can't be playing with our economy. We need to be more optimistic. We need to be more realistic. We need to research more. And I would like to tell you, my neighbor, I'm very happy that at least one day in my life, in this year, I could see 3.3 GDP. And the more positive we talk about the country, the better for us. I haven't actually said, but I do have a document. I'll forward it to you by Professor Joseph Stiglitz. Joseph Stiglitz is the most cited economist of our time, where he is talking about these people who create the rating stuff, you know. I'll send you that document. I won't talk about it now because I want to have real facts. Yeah. And I think in one lecture, Professor Haijun Chang also touched on that one. And I think we should take all those things into account. But GDP today is 3.3 in South Africa. Thank you.
Who's next? No one this side. All right. Let's head over to the people who respond.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thanks members for the range of questions. Before I start answering questions and Chair of the Protection, I'm going to refer to questions that are specific to our mandates. I mean, to expect us to answer questions outside it may not be fair. And so just a word on the mandate. So our mandate in the particular project was responding to a request from this committee to look at energy costs. So it's a very very discreet and specific mandate, and whilst we appreciate questions that speak to broader economic issues and economic impact issues regarding energy choice, that wasn't specifically part of the mandate, and if members are potentially interested, my directors here, and you know, there are other areas that could be looked at. Whenever we present specifically what we have covered, and it's not possible for us to have a particularly broad array of subject matter. So we're just specifically energy costs, and we didn't do our own costing as noted. So I shall proceed with the questions that are relevant sequentially, and my colleague Brandon will come in at the end. I've mentioned a mandate on Boom again. Have you seen the document? Because some of the points you raised are in the document. So we made reference to the Integrated Energy Plan. I used to be, when I was treasury, part of the Integrated Energy Plan, so we're quite aware of its implications for the IRP, and IRP is a subset of the Integrated Energy Plan. So I think that would probably answer some of your questions and assuage some of your concerns. Nuclear costs. I mean, if you're familiar with energy, I mean, if we've got LCOE and we've got overnight capital costs, by inference, we can actually calculate an estimate of the capital costs, and we have done this in the document. And we've used the EFRI study. So a little note on the EFRI study, and we've mentioned the merits of this particular costing in our documents. We have boxes on it on page 10, and I think it's quite useful. Now, why we've used the... No, it's on the text. It's in the document, on page 10 in the hard copy of the document. It has... So it says that what is particularly useful is the this is the most reliable, in our view, accessible, publicly accessible estimate of costs from the EPI study, and is quite useful. So what we do in our study is we take total capacity estimated based on EPI study, multiplied by the overnight capital cost, and we get a capital cost estimate for the range of technologies. Now, I think it's important when we're discussing, and we have to approach the subject with care, that this is an overnight capital cost estimation. It doesn't give you a full cost boundary for electric plants. Right? So to set up nuclear plants in the Western Cape alongside nuclear would be very different setting it up in Matatiao, you know, for example, given that there are transmission costs associated to this preparation of the ground, this procurement, and a whole range of other costs that go in. So I think there's a sort of caution and as a person who's technically involved in the subject, we shouldn't just cost it to lose. At the same time, having cost estimates are useful to get decisions. So we have provided that. In terms of the levelized gas cost, again, I mean, we've used the EPI study and we're quite clear about our methodology. And actually, they're very clear about the methodology, so they make a particular assumption of gas and feedstock. Now, what I do know, and with some authority, is that the gas currently available in southern Mozambique is only sufficient for Sasol purposes. Right? So South Africa may not be able to access those fields. However, the fields in northern Mozambique are a potential option. The gas fields and some of the gas byproducts from Angola are potentially an option. Again, I mean, so those are areas that I'm familiar with those particular pieces of information, but I mean, we've not really looked into feedstock. I mean, we're basing our work on the FE study. The NDP, I'm very familiar with the energy chapter of NDP. My reading of that particular chapter is that the NDP is agnostic on technology choice. It does gesture in favor of gas, and it does caution against the high cost of procurement of nuclear. That's what NDP says. That's my reading of it. Honorable members may differ in that respect, but that's what the chapter says. In my view, it's quite agnostic. The cost of technology, of technology on nuclear, we want to look at estimated impact of tariffs on the economy or the impact on tariffs. I previously authored a paper on electricity tariffs and the tariff setting methodology, and I think it's particularly useful for members to be familiar with the tariff setting methodology, also in light of Honorable Kobaza's question about the ability to absorb and how absorption of costs work. But no, we haven't looked at the impact on the economy of tariffs, but we have noted that higher tariffs have, if so, has certain implications. Assumptions of why energy demand is changing. We've not projected our own energy demand going forward. We keep a close eye at PBO on energy demand. At least every two or three editions of our quarterly economic brief, we note how energy demand, relatively specifically demand, has changed in the economy. But I would strongly wager that it's not because of one factor. It's not purely because of low economic growth. This aggregation is obviously quite challenging, but I have the ESCOM's demand figures from different industries and seen that those industry demand in terms of electricity has fallen far faster than the actual change in output of those sectors, which suggests that there are efficiency components affecting electricity demand. Obviously, the other part is also constrained supply in the economy. We've been running a particularly slim wafer thin reserve margin, as well as slow economic growth. So, in my view, all three of those factors have contributed to lower demand. And current electricity demand hasn't even reached 2007 levels. And the PDO has noted this in the previous output. Regarding localization, we haven't looked at the cost of localization or the potential of localization. What we have been quite explicit about, allows us to, in the section discussed by the colleague Brandon, the EFRI study on Table 5 of our document, indicate what their assumptions about import versus local content is. In addition to that, and we have noted this in our study, is that the DTI commissioned, I think it was in 2012, if I recall correctly, a study by an expert engineering consulting firm known as Walt Parsons to look at the potential for localization of nuclear procurement. And there are different estimates So the Wally Parsons study commissioned by the DTI looked at this potential for maybe 40% localization in the procurement of nuclear. Obviously, the localization potential changes, and my colleague Brand has noted that significant localization generally means higher costs. Again, I mentioned we haven't done a tariff study, but we have a very close eye on tariffs. What we have noted in our study is a significant real increase in electricity tariffs since 2007. We've provided real increases and nominal increases, and this is quite significant. In discussing tariff increase, it's important to note or make a distinction between ESCOM tariffs and tariffs the average consumer pays, because ESCOM is a seller of electricity. Sometimes certain components of households and businesses are supplied directly by ESCOM, but the vast majority of households are supplied by municipalities. So municipalities buy electricity from ESCOM and they resell it to us. So there's another markup, if you like. So, I mean, there was points on IEP versus IRP and that this committee doesn't make a decision that gets out of the work of the PO to comment on that. And yes, finally, regarding your question about costs, there's a very useful study that we found that was concluded in 2014, an international study looking at cost overruns of different technologies regarding energy, which I think is very useful and instructive. So this was a study done by Slovakul, Gilbert, and Nugent's on cost overruns called this box 4 on page 14 of our study. What this shows is for a range of technologies, and they've got a pretty large sample, what portion of projects have cost overrun and time overruns, and what is the portion of cost and time overruns? I think this is important. Now, it's not only South Africa that has cost overruns. The private sector, the public sector, they've got 401 projects around the world, including the Americas, Asia, Europe, and Africa, and all projects are run over cost. And I think it's important to note this. And certain technologies seem to be more susceptible to cost overruns, both in terms of proportion as well as in terms of the degree. Now, moving on to Honorable Joseph Tola's question on have we covered it all of electrification and the history of this country. We do have in our background significant discussions on the electrification program of this country, which is actually a success. I mean, a huge success program in terms of the number of households and in terms of the proportion of the population that have access to electricity because of that program. Right? I mean, so the most recent census that I looked at, 2011 census, I mean, the numbers are quite significant in terms of household access to electricity over time. And so we do discuss that, and we do know the role of history and South Africa's unique history in the electricity crisis that the country has had to confront over the past 7-8 years. And we discussed part of this over here, and we have access to other resources which discusses it in more detail. Honorable Fig, your questions about how do we meet the objectives, I think that's what the study tries to gesture at. It's a multi-factor, multi-criteria decision-making, and that's what the IED and the IRP try to do. You asked a question about why the tariffs not go up. So tariffs is an area that I've done a little bit of work in. So what happens is pre-94 you have a massive oil program, right? The Apartheid government holds lots of excess capacity. A lot of these plants were mothballed in the late 1980s and the early 90s. Mothballed means they were taken out of commission, closed up, and there's some spider webs inside, and now you try to decommission some of these old plants. They were mothballed because we had excess capacity. Now when you have your electricity, this is a very useful thought. When you have electricity cost, right? So you have, in terms of how the tariff works, there's capital components, there's fuel cost, there's operation and maintenance, and there's some other costs involved. Now, what happened is by the early 90s, the capital cost component was pretty much negligible. It was almost zero. We noticed in the footnotes in our documents. Consequently, the only thing the government had to pay for was for fuel, operations, and maintenance. Now, in South Africa, if you look at our coal stations, we have quite a few, especially our country. Most of these, I think all but one or two, are actually served by dedicated coal mines. So South Africa engaged in contracts with coal mines to provide what's called cost-plus contracts. So we had relatively cheap coal, which basically supplies mines. We basically had to keep those plants running without capital cost components, which allowed for a very low cost of production of electricity. Right? That continues. Then in the early 90s, I've seen the Eskom annual report from 1994-95, an active decision taken by the South African government was to actually have real decreases in electricity tariffs. What this did is that it incentivized an energy-intensive industrial base, and you see a significant investment in energy-intensive sectors, which I've mentioned in the presentation. And then you have the drop, which is this very significant increase in energy demand. Come the mid-2000s, South Africa started investing. Now, over many years, you haven't invested, which allowed you to have minimal growth in energy tariffs. You start investing. When you invest, you have a return on the capital component of your investment, which is how tariff works, plus your feed-through cost. That capital component, boom, increases a very significant part. Consequently, you have the large increases in tariffs. And in our document, we note the full extent of tariff increases. So that's a brief history of how the tariffs work and why they've had significant increases from 2007 onwards, and what you had very modest, if all, increases in prior to that point in time. New investments? No, we don't instigate new investments in the study. We'll just provide a table as to what government has initiated. Those numbers are primarily from ESCOM. In terms of low demand and why load shedding, I'll move on to load shedding initially. So what happens with load shedding is you have demand and supply, and when supply exceeds demand, you're fine. And when demand increases and supply can't meet demand, then you're in a bit of a fix. And what Eskom has to do, had to do initially, was load shedding in the country, which is also referred to as blackouts. Initial period, later on you have brownouts, and then Eskom has to do something called demand side management. Basically, you're trying to reduce overall demand in the economy, given that to actually increase supply in the economy, it takes a lot longer to actually do that. And so that's primarily why this was required. Its cost on the economy, those are quite significant. There are many estimates of that, some by National Treasury, that are available. And then in terms of low demand, yeah, so low demand, I think I answered earlier on for at least three factors. Why not all costs are considered an overnight capital cost? They aren't, because it's a capital cost. It's not a cost of the complete running of the plant, and that's what the LCOE tries to do. It compensates for the limitations of the capital cost. Yeah, that's what's useful about the overnight capital cost is gives a sense of the upfront affordability for the plant. And hence, industry looks at LCOE as well, not just one. So the two aren't perfect substitutes. This is a superior one, is the LCOE. But one should also bear in mind the overnight capital cost. Honorable Low, I think, mentioned already, not for PVO to decide the direction. We merely present numbers, most reliable numbers we have had access to, or what we present over here. What we do is provide details and a range of different options. So costs, environmental considerations, lead time, and the like. And again, I've mentioned that we have looked at the cost of the country or the economy in terms of rand per se or impact on the economy. What we have done is provide what we think is a decent indication of what are the general implications from different technologies, and certain technologies are more prone in this respect. On the Babaza, in terms of costs and clean energy, what we do... what we do over here, your question regarding clean energy, on our graph, is we try and show carbon emissions for different technologies. I mentioned earlier the technologies that we consider are the ones that are in the IRP and that are consistent over time for comparability. So different technologies emit different amounts of carbon emissions, CO2. So solar technology, hydro, zero emissions. Nuclear, negligible for any emissions. Coal is particularly dirty technology in terms of carbon emissions. Biomass, very carbon intensive. So what the axis on the right-hand side shows is CO2 emissions. So technologies closer to the right-hand side, further out right, have higher emissions. So you can see biomass from the range of technologies we've shown has the highest emissions. And on the extreme left, you've got solar, and you've got nuclear, and then you've got wind, you've got hydro. Those are basically zero or negligible emissions. And then there are technologies in the middle, which are intermediate in terms of their output. What is important, my colleague Brandon mentioned, is because Africa has made certain commitments to reducing its carbon emissions. But we notice over here that reducing carbon emissions, and I think it's important considering public finances, is there's nothing as speed reduction in carbon emissions. It comes at a cost. But just some things to look at are the different coal technologies. So if you look at coal 2 or if you look at coal 6, right, coal 2 and coal 6 compared to coal 1 and coal 3, coal 2 and coal 6 are more expensive technologies. These have technological components that reduce or they try and extract carbon from the emissions. Right? So there's different technologies that they use, but this comes at a cost. So if you want to still use coal technology, but trying to also meet environmental objectives of the country, there's a cost associated with that. And that's what we're trying to show here. Certain technology is actually win-win, like hydro. Again, South Africa is a water-scarce country. Hydro options are largely imported. We have some storage, which isn't particularly useful for our needs. But hydro 1, 2, and 3 are options that the IRP update included from Mozambique and Zambia. We have provided a discussion in our document on regional hydro options, the one being from the DR Congo. Cost estimates from here we don't have, but I think it's important to frame the discussion if one is trying to reduce carbon emissions, placing a lot of emphasis on regional integration. Regarding pilots and costs, I mentioned that South Africa's tariffs are determined by the National Energy Regulator, and they use a formula which is contained in the Energy Pricing Policy of 2008. Historically, what we've done as a country, as historically, I mean from 2008 onwards, is we've not transferred full costs of electricity generation to the consumer. Why this was done according to the 2008 policy was primarily to ease the transition. Right, so you've had a period of very low electricity increases and also very significant increases where households over a few years saw their electricity bill double. So what the energy pricing policy does, it calls for a phased-in approach to energy electricity price increases. However, it's supposed to have been fully cost-effective by 2012-2013. This is not the case as yet. At the same time, I think it needs to be noted that we have an independent regulator which determines what tariff Eskom can charge or what tariff anybody charges. And so it's not up to government per se to determine what Eskom absorbs and what is borne by the consumer. It's for an independent regulator to determine that. And there's a whole formula that goes into that and certain assumptions. Estimates of nuclear, what we've provided here is the EPRI estimates, which are from experts' analysis and based on consultation with Eskom, which indicates that on a LCOE basis, different costs. So, I mean, and I think they're quite explicit as they stand. Those are pretty much the questions that I wanted to respond to. I think Brandon,
just quickly on the 3% growth, I think it's important to understand the particular methodology that we use when we report those kinds of numbers. So that number is a quarter-on-quarter growth rate. So they're basically saying that this is how the economy is growing from one quarter to the next. Then they add some kind of seasonal adjustments to this number, and then they analyze it. So they basically make it look as if it's what the growth would be over a year. But what you tend to get with this, it's called a SAR, what you tend to get with that methodology is quite a lot of volatility. And so if you look at your quarter-to-quarter SAR, you just get a lot of up-and-down movements because it's not flying up orbit, it's something to that effect when it annualizes. So there's another methodology you can use, which is year-on-year. You could say, take quarter two from this year and compare it to quarter three year, and if you plot that against the SAR, you'll see that's kind of less volatile. So the point is, with a 2.3%, growth rates, it's easy to get numbers like that when your previous quarter was a particularly abnormal as well. So you have some kind of a natural disaster or whatever, and it's a very low base, and then you can get quite a nice bump. So that's why. But this is still positive now. We want to take some of that into
our future. I think there are follow-up questions, but are all the questions supported, all of them. All right.
Then I'll start with you, Honourable Member Badil McKay, and then Honourable Member Dr. Fink, and then Honourable Member Shope Sitole, in that order.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the responses. Chair, I just want to understand from your perspective, and because I'm not quite sure what the future of this document is, noting that it will play a significant role potentially for the nuclear people to go ahead and helping MPs and policymakers understand the associated costs, there might be a need for further elaboration or further detailed study in the document. I think the debate goes sad. I think it helps us position the debate quite accurately, but fundamentally I think there are some considerations that are some of the assumptions that have been applied may not be necessarily detailed enough to help policymakers really push out some of the minutiae to really make a clear assessment of what they're focusing on. So perhaps my suggestion would be is that it's a great ask. We might expand or refine some of why the document was requested, but recognizing that this document is going through appropriations and what appropriations says has a great influence on the House. We might just want to refine some of the findings and also maybe take some of the findings and maybe detail them a bit more clearly. Chair, with that in mind, I would just like to raise the issue of very unique costs associated with nuclear. So LCE is not a great measure, even though I know it's a standardized measure, it's not a great measure for assessing comparative technology, specifically because you can't assess the variability of the cost of technology over time. Now, over time, we've seen that nuclear technology increases in cost constantly, where renewable costs are constantly on a downward trajectory. So fundamentally, the cost of nuclear versus renewables at this point in time is X, which you've shown us, but in 2 years' time it will be Y, and fundamentally the discrepancy between the costs will get greater and greater and greater over time. And that's something actually needs to make quite clear in the material, and recognizing some of the comments from one of my colleagues earlier about how we view these different technologies. And fundamentally that needs to be premised in a document. Specifically around nuclear, we have to recognize that nuclear has very specific storage costs, which last hundreds of years. And those storage costs are not insignificant and need to be calculated in the overall expense of nuclear. We also need to consider the decommission costs, which no one quite has a price for, but the Germans who are decommissioning now are saying that the cost of decommissioning is the same price as commissioning, which means that if every nuclear station I buy, and according to your figure on table, in terms of box 4, you're essentially telling me every nuclear power station I buy, cost overruns are almost 100%, which means for every one I'm buying, I'm paying double. Yes, well, essentially I'm buying one, but I'm paying 2, and then I'm decommissioning one, so I'm actually paying for 3 for every one that I buy. So fundamentally, that needs to be put up front in the document. And a lot of our colleagues don't understand the fact that every time you buy one, you're paying the 3. You know, like, let's be clear about that. That's essentially what we're doing. So when we're talking about levelized costs, it's not the great measure to compare the different technologies. Fundamentally, as politicians and policymakers, we really need it to be simplified, take out the technical information, and make it clear, when I'm buying one apple, I'm actually paying for 3, and that's not good value in any sense of terms. And so that would be really helpful if we assess in terms of your methodology, not just merely adopting FB's assumptions, but actually bringing forward some assessment and thinking within the units around how these costs and implications of the costs of Africans, specifically for policymakers, because there are very few sources of information that address it in that way. One of the reports I do recommend that you also take a look at is the World Nuclear Report. It uses a methodology that has been determined by the University of Greenwich, specifically around nuclear costing, which might be far more helpful than the LTE methodology which you're applying. And also, if you could maybe provide us with some assessments of the lifespan of the technology. So, for example, a nuclear power station was supposed to be built for 40 years, they're now running to 80 years. Obviously, over that period of time, capital costs decrease quite significantly, and therefore nuclear technology over time becomes cheaper in terms of the cost towards, in terms of tariff and implications for users. But again, also, one thing you haven't really highlighted is decommissioning costs for renewables. And also, one of the key things coming out of the IEP is specifically the scope for how much we see in terms of renewables in total of energy mix versus nuclear, because essentially that's what we're going to be buying. And in terms of the IEP, we're looking at 20 times existing installed capacity for nuclear. So again, if we're looking at 20 times the existing installed capacity, I'm paying for 40 times or even more. So what you really do need to bring through is the energy policy from the IEP into this document, reflected in terms of the costs, so that we really do understand more broadly. That's just a request, Chair. That would be my usefulness from this unit.
I just want to make one point, Honourable McKay, Chair. You raise a lot of good questions and a lot of good points. I think also the terms of reference of this document is something very different to what you're raising. And I suggest in future, Chair, that the committee looks carefully at the terms of reference that is submitted to the PBO. Because the issues raised, very good. All issues are critical, very important. Unfortunately, they were not part of the terms of reference that we... So your questions are noted, very good. I think if you want us to take it further, let's look at terms of reference. And I think that's a critical point here. So that we don't get a bit about the bush butt issues that are raised and so on. I also want to make a point here to Honourable Lowe. Honourable Lowe, I think, also raised critical issues. The PBO is not an organisation outside of Parliament. We are here to provide you with information so that you make decisions and policy choices. Documents is not for understanding. Chair, I think that's an important point. The work that we do comes from this committee. So we provide work to you that you request us to do based on the terms of reference. So I think those are important issues, Chair, you know, that we, so that the next time we do come, we do provide you with information, so information is relevant to your needs. So I'm getting a bit confused, Chair, with worry that the issues are raised which are not part of the terms of reference to the PBO. I want to make it clear that this objective, as far as I understand it, is to give you an indication of the technology mix, the options that are there, and for you then to make your minds up as to what the options are, as politicians and as policymakers. All we can do is give you the information. You will have to use that information for how you understand it as a committee and how you utilize it. So thank you, Chair. Sorry for that interjection, but I just thought it's important just to clarify that matter.
for bringing the clarity, and I'm sure honourable members now understand our engagement. Our engagement is about clarity seeking questions, and indeed the terms of reference that were given to PBO, you know, to prepare for this presentation. Honourable member McKay.
Just so I can be clear, I did premise my comments specifically around the fact that the document needs to be deepened and aligned. Can I recommend, I will be writing to my own chairperson to recommend that the bills of reference is shared with the Energy Portfolio Committee, because fundamentally energy policy is determined there, and therefore so is such a energy mix, and therefore we should possibly resubmit a joint research framework for them, because as I said, a great document, outstanding work from the parliamentary office, but it asks specific questions that we as politicians do need to know, and possibly on this specific issue, we do need closer alignment between the portfolio and energy and appropriations so that we do get to the crux of it. Because, as I have emphasized, what the appropriation committee says from a political point of view in the House stands. It's hugely significant. So we need to make sure that the MPs from both portfolio committees are very well and adequately informed.
Well, there's a proposal on the table, honourable members. What's your take of a joint sitting? But if I understand you correctly, you want us to review the terms of reference, and then we then give it to the PBO, and then again request them to come back to present to us. So it's in your hands, honourable members, if I can be guided on the way forward in this particular matter. Honourable member Tuasa.
Yeah, it's always been a practice in this committee that where issues that this committee deals with have also reference to other committees, we always try and hold joint committee meetings. So what is being proposed is not a thing we should pursue. That
the
kind of joint committee
meeting. I think the secretary is taking note of that, and then yeah, you will facilitate that way. Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. I know that after Honourable Member McKay, I recognise Honourable Member Fink. Did you raise your hand?
Yes, thank you. Just two quick follow-up inputs. The one regarding the document referred to on page 14 in the text about the overlap and the overspend and the overrun of time. Then I ask the question, should we then not in budgeting for any project include that? Because it doesn't help me being able to afford and see this Benz and I've got no money for the diesel. So you need to have the money for the capital or for the equipment as well as the running cost. So just a question, should that not then be a way that we budget and we compare alternatives? And then the other issue is, if I look at the slide number 24, I'm just thinking now that it seems as though based on information we receive from the PBO, we would then go for Hydro 3, Hydro 2, Hydro 1, Gas 1, Wind, Gas 2. And we can stop. Even coal too we can get to. And maybe either or combination of. So I'm pleased to see that based on information that we're not even going to touch nuclear. Thank you.
Thank you, Sir President. I am covered by Professor. Because I wanted to bring to light the fact that maybe the task that we gave PBO to do was not including what the member is asking for. Maybe next time we should actually include what he requires. And I'm covered by the suggestion and the acceptance of the joint.
Okay, so thank you for joining us, because the honourable member is from another committee. Out of interest, she joined us, and then because of her insight of the work of the other committee, she is now bringing these questions so that, and the important proposal that we get together when we deal with these matters. Thank you very much.
Any other hands?
Dr. Madoki?
Yes, no, I support my colleague to say that let us further the research on what he has raised, given the hidden cost, like he was saying that when you buy one, you pay for three, you know. Even on the other, you know, on the renewables, we must also identify the hidden cost, like to say that in the nuclear, it doesn't depend on the natural resources, you know, because as the presenter was saying, we are a scarce water country. So also to indicate if it doesn't depend on that, because also it's the cost when you use those natural resources, and also indication that also it doesn't use a lot of fuel, also the other, the nuclear, because also that was cut the cost. That's why we are saying that we need to balance it up, to say comparison on the advantages, disadvantages, and so on. So that even the hidden cost, even on the other one, not only on the nuclear, that when you buy one, you pay for three. On the other one, also you use the natural resources a lot, you use the fuel and so on, which is the cost, to balance it up. Thank you.
Honorable Lou, thank you. I'm in agreement with all of my colleagues, but I just want to check, Chair, when we send out the terms of reference and so, are we going to manage that? Are we going to do and put all of the questions that also couldn't be answered today? So, because I'm just scared for the fact when we come back again and we sit as a committee and then we pose questions again, and then it will be told to us, no, it was not in the terms of reference, so we cannot provide you with that information and stuff like that. So, no, wait, Chief, wait. So I'm just scared for that. So I'm just thinking, Chair, when we do the terms of reference, we have exact points. So that can also assist their work and then preparing the documents for us, and also assist us when we are posing questions and so forth. Thank you, Chair.
All right, I think it's a fair comment, but then, Prof, I would like you to guide us. If, for instance, you're not ready with the responses to some of the questions that have been raised, will you be in position to respond to them? Because it is clear that we need a separate presentation that will be all inclusive, as we will be sitting together with the other committee. Do you want to respond to them now, those questions, or we put everybody in, everything in the basket for the next presentation?
Thank you, Chair. I think Honorable Lowe's point is right, and I think the terms of reference should have guided us. Example, what we were presenting here. But I still take the point that the questions were good and that there is important issues. I want to make one point, Arnold, because we are not energy researchers. We research around money bills and the impact of money bills. And that's why I say your questions are excellent. A lot of it doesn't impact on the work we do as economists, finance specialists, etc. And that's why we serve these committees. But I think a lot of the issues we can address, if I'm not mistaken, you know, we can try and assist and look at them. We might not address all the issues that you want us to address, but most of it I'm sure we can consider in addressing. So maybe come back and do that presentation. So I think one of those points that maybe we get the questions shared from you, and that we respond to it in that sense, and the point.
I said five honourable members.
So just a point of clarity, two points. The first one, just to be clear, we'll sit together as two portfolio committee and we'll refine and update the terms of reference. And on the updated terms of reference that we agree to and with the PDO, they will then update their documents in terms of the updated terms of reference. Is that what we agree to? This is the first one. Please. And then the second point of clarity is, Chair, I understand that we're working with economists and the type of work, the issues I'm raising are not policy or energy related, they're economic questions that relate to the nuclear deal, which will be the biggest single procurement in this country. So the PDO might need to consider consulting external expertise if they don't have it internally to help but make that available information to MPs. And that's a request, I'm just putting that forward to you, Chair. But considering the size of the deal, the importance of the deal, and the significant economic impacts, we as politicians might need to decide if we can help with the office structure up, if we ask questions that need answered that can't be answered by the office. Thank you.
Let's do the details. after this meeting. Yeah, I'm sure she'll be able to craft terms of reference that will satisfy both committees. Yes, may I come in?
I'm still interpreting my mandate quite narrowly and responding to questions as a related project. In terms of Honourable McKay's questions on costs over time changing, yet it is true that estimated costs for different technologies may change over time, but the FCOE does make certain assumptions about fuel costs over time, about finance costs over time, about inflation over time, about O&M over time, including labor and other input costs. And again, we did the study not with a bias towards any particular technology. We looked at all technologies with intermediate and baseload availability, right? So we didn't focus specifically on nuclear. That being said, though, it is true that the storage costs for nuclear waste are a challenge, and this is a challenge that all experts face around the world. And consequently, this is never or seldomly factored into cost estimates, and this is a bit of a challenge. Secondly, decommissioning costs, as pointed out by the member, are also an issue. We are only internationally trying to get some data now, and so the data is quite patchy. Inkley Point in the UK provides some useful points and experiences in Japan, and as the member pointed out, Germany as well. Still, from chatting to energy experts and engineers, these costs are not going to be reliable. Obviously, the reliability of the cost estimate increases the more observations you have. So if you have two or three observations, this could be particularly peachy, they could be quite drastic, or they could just be outliers. And as a PBR, I think that we were responsible for every number we put out there. We can't put in hearsay numbers, we can't put in back of the envelope calculations of like 3 to 1 or something of the sort. We're responsible for numbers, and the numbers we put have to be credible, they have to be from a credible source, and I think we take pride in our office in doing that, and we're not willing to use hearsay numbers. So those are primarily my responses in that respect. Honourable Mashoke's question regarding different types of costs, the LCOE covers those costs, and so my colleague early on had a graph showing a split between the different cost components for different technologies, and if you look at coal and if you look at gas, the fuel cost is one of the most significant components. For renewables, the fuel cost is zero. And I think just if you could maybe re-explain the LCOE, it's particularly useful in that respect. As mentioned by my director, we're not energy experts, per se, and so we're guided by energy experts. And if industry uses a particular estimate, we're not going to try and reinvent that by an alternate expression of that. When it comes to fiscal policy, maybe we'll double it a bit, but we'll work within what's accepted. Thank you.
Well, thank you for those responses, but just two questions from me. On the energy efficiency, what can be done to improve levels of energy efficiency in a significant way in both the industry and households? The second question is on uncertainty. How should the country go about considering additional capital investment in energy given the current challenging economic outlook for South Africa? So you may then respond to the remaining questions and then...
Abuchay, could you just restate the second question? I got the first one, energy efficiency, the second one.
This one is how should the country go about considering additional capital investment in energy given the current challenge economic outlook of South Africa in the South African context?
So regarding energy efficiency, there have been numerous attempts and initiatives by ESCOM as well as the Department of Energy and the Department of Trade and Industry on both the household and the industry front to try and increase energy efficiency or reduce demand from the common example of our solar users. So we've rolled out, as a country, rolled out a significant number of solar users. I don't know the actual estimate right, or the actual number right now. But this, so that improves household efficiency. Again, the price signal has also been a driver of efficiency for a lot of industry and households. Many people have invested in heat pumps or solar geysers on their own accord. ESCOM at one stage was you know, rolling out a lot of the energy saving bulbs. So the price will assist in terms of pushing energy efficiency. However, in the absence of alternatives, right? So if you can't move from electricity to gas, it results in behavioral adjustments. The key question over here is what should the electricity price be? If we look at a cost-effective electricity price based on tariff determination methodology, it would be a lot higher than what it currently is. Part of this, and this is some work that PBO is currently doing because Eskom's finance and PBO is busy with this work, which we're doing, if I recall, for the Standing Committee on Finance, on Eskom's finances. So part of that high cost is because of the utility. Part of it is just because this is what electricity costs to produce nowadays. So yeah, the other energy efficiency, energy enhancing mechanisms that we can build up. Okay, yes. My colleagues reminded me that what we also do as a country is we have two pricing methodologies that assist with energy efficiency. One is called in-kind block tariffs. So if you get your electricity bill, if you're fortunate enough to have a prepaid meter, the first tranche is at a certain price, second tranche at another price, and the third tranche at another price. So the more you use, the more you pay. And so that's, again, intended to drive some efficiencies. Thirdly, you can have time of use tariffs, and that's partially covered by the different tranches. In other parts of the world, you have something known as smart meters. So smart meters give you a preference. So if you look at the meter in your house, okay, right now if I were to keep my stove on for half an hour but I use gas, it will cost me so much. So they give you the price per kilowatt hour of electricity. I mentioned the DTI has rolled out has significant incentives for companies to invest in new technology that's less energy intensive, and that's gone a long way. So that I think maybe covers the question to an extent. The second question was how do we go about adding additional capacity, and that's essentially what information we've tried to provide in our work. We've noted, and especially given that it concerns manuals, it's not purely about what's the most efficient technology. It's not purely about what technology allows us the greatest localization or lowest reduction in carbon emissions, or what the most robust technology. It's a multi-criteria decision that needs to be made. However, as PBO, given that we are concerned manuals, we try and place significant emphasize the importance of policymakers looking at the state of the country's finances, Eskom's precarious financial situation, the country's high level of debt, significant guarantees extended to different SOEs, including Eskom, as well as the potential impacts of higher tariffs on households, cost of living, and competitiveness of the economy generally. Thank you.
I think you raised critical issues as well for finances. I don't know if my directors go first. I think Rishad's point is spot on. I think what we're seeing in the globally, everyone being unsure about what a global recovery is going to be like, what's going to happen in terms of demand for commodities and how we perform, and what's going to happen to the South African road path. I think we need to actually be extra cautious. That doesn't mean that we don't make plans for the next 40 or 50 years, but in that, then I think we put in a section talking about the possibility of lower capital costs and more modular, even if the costs are more expensive. And part of that was also relating to the point that Honourable McKay made about certain other technology costs may reduce in a pretty short period of time, not in the long term only. So we were saying that in making a decision about spending, especially large capital upfront costs, we have to be quite circumspect. And so we weren't trying to sort of force an opinion, but we were actually saying that in the current environment, there's a caution. You know, in economics, we often talk about
in increasing uncertainty, you prefer liquidity. So you prefer to sit on your money and not invest, so you're more cautious about your investments in the short run until you have more certainty. So as we, and hopefully the world will shift into a period of more certainty in a few years' time. But in the current period, I think we should understand, of course. So just a last point is, I think also my colleague was pointing out to me that the latest IMP may actually also make things much more clear for us, because we're working on a 2010 IMP and sort of other figures after that. And I think the delays of the IMP have made us also be more circumspect in the kind of things we were saying in the report. I think if the latest IMP has more updated numbers in terms of projections for growth, projections or demand for liquidity, we could actually then say things with a bit more certainty. And so there is uncertainty linked to the IMP and when it's going to be released. It would be great if we could get the IMP before we come to the next version of this document, but we can't. We'll have to go here, whatever happens. Thank you.
Just in terms of your questions here, I think the two issues that I think my colleague addressed is the modular approach. You know, the modular approach, you know, to investing, and I think maybe that could address some of your concerns as well as to how you invest going forward. The other thing is localization and the benefits of the South African economy. And I think it also leads to the issue of energy efficiency. I think we notice that as countries develop, energy efficiency becomes more important. Developing countries, and I think on for sure Mr. Torres spoke about this, poorer countries, is more about getting access to the energy. You know, I think those actions we need to consider as well going forward. And you find only more affluent societies, I think about the energy efficiency, renewables, etc. At more higher level, even, you know, given the trade-offs as such, you know, whereas we might be more concerned in our rural areas with just getting access to the grid, electricity, and having light on the house, you know. So I think those are two issues I think we should raise here. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. It looks like we've exhausted the discussion. And much as I thought that this was technical, you can rest assured, members had deeper insight, gained deeper insight, hence the vigorous and robust engagement. But also, let's also thank the visiting member to the committee. I wish I had been told before so that I welcome and acknowledge and welcome you properly, but thank you for coming. We've also benefited from your input. And I will now give you, Professor Chahid, to make your closing statement.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, honorable members, for the questions and the discussion. So I think there's a few important issues I think that we try to present today. The one is the trade-offs that are available and the choices I think you need to make between the trade-offs. And unfortunately, that's the job of US legislature, you know, to do. We can only provide you with that information. At the end of the day, your decision and how you influence the country going forward in this regard. I think the other thing we brought to the table is the international best practices. You know, there's some of them is there and you can look at it. And I think our colleagues made the point that they might not really be applicable, but they do assist us in making policy choices and policy decisions going forward. The other thing is the methodology. And I think we presented you with two methodologies. Again, as I'm going to say, we're not research energy specialists, but you know, with your guidance and so on, maybe we could go in that direction and provide some support and advice. But we provided some of our methodology, and for me the methodology is very sound. It's internationally recognized methodologies. And that we can use it, you know, to make decisions one way or other. I think you know the academics on the policy as well. There will always be a question around methodology. Unfortunately, you know, it becomes a political issue if we don't get involved in. But that's the methodology we put forth. So, you know, it's the best we can, and we can justify in that sense. The issues around renewables, as I say, you know, it's about risks, it's about cost. It's about the appropriate policy at the right time you know, is carbon emissions really that important or not, given the level of development in UK important or not, given our level of development, etc., etc. And it is also within the economic and political context, I think, that these things will have to be debated and discussed. I think we'd be naive, honorable chair, if we think that these are just technical trade-offs that we're going to make without, you know, the broader political and economic choices. Chair, I think the last point I want to end up with is your approach about investment. And I think maybe at this stage, the modular approach, as my colleague also mentioned, small tranches looking at, you know, potential mixes of technology and how they pan out could possibly be a way to go in this regard. But it's for you to consider. And then the issue of localization, I think, is critical as well. At the end of the day, we face poverty, inequality, employment, and unfortunately, you can't forget about it. I think one important point which I also agree with Honourable McKay, and I think Honourable Lowe also referred to, is NDP. And maybe make some inputs into the NDP, you know, in that regard. And also at some stage, which we have done on the book, is how far the NDP objectives are in terms of meetings on targets, etc., etc. So maybe that's also another consideration we could take on the book. Thank you. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Professor. Let me thank the staff members for arranging for this meeting, and thank you so much for the documentation. I'd also like to thank the honourable members for their availability for this meeting, but also for their invaluable contribution, you know, that came through a robust engagement between ourselves. I'd like to thank the PBO office for being resourceful. And thank you so much for the well-researched document and presentation, but also for simplifying these matters for us. I have no doubt that you have empowered us, and we're looking forward to this other presentation, where we'll be having a joint sitting with the Committee on Energy. We always benefit from your inputs, and yeah, indeed, you mustn't get tired. We'll be calling you time and again. You can see we really are serious. We want to learn so that we can be in a position to assist with quality recommendations as this committee to the House. And I said quality recommendation, and I'm sure you've seen in our discussions also that because we take this nation building serious, and you know, economic development and the development of the country serious, and we were able, as people coming from different political parties, rising above to find the best solution for this country. We are about that. When we get to these meetings, and then you must see us being our political leaders in the House. It's allowed. As long as here we can be able to focus and assist one another, eh? Because it's not about us anymore. It is about our children. So if you can just write about when we're here, prepare and come and make our best input, that will take this nation building forward. Well, thanks to all of you for your full participation on this critical briefing from the Parliamentary Budget Office on the electricity generation technology choice, cost and considerations. I will just highlight some of the key issues emanating from the meeting. One, ensuring affordability in any option of electricity generation came out as critical. The committee remains very concerned about project costs and life cycle costs of all presented technologies and wants to see value for money. Actually, here we are about value for money. Now, the other key point that came out was that the selected options, the carefully selected options, should lead to the development of a vibrant, diversified and competitive electricity sector, which assures our citizens and the most vulnerable in our society of a robust and flexible energy supply. Then thirdly, going forward, firstly, the committee secretariat of the two committees will liaise with each other on a program for
this issue of cost-effective energy generation and input for the PBO to respond to. It's actually, it's the Secretariat and I think the research and I think these two teams will sit together and develop the terms of reference. Terms of reference that I think the chairpersons and the whips from the two committees can sit down and, you know, endorse before it's sent off. Agreed?
Agreed.
Now, again, and this is ongoing work. Therefore, concerns and findings emanating from today's meeting will be incorporated in our work and reports leading up to the finalization of the 2016 medium-term budget policy statement. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for your invaluable contribution to the budget, Parliamentary Budget Office, and then I wish to highlight the following key issues emanating from sorry. But thank you very much. The meeting between ourselves is adjourned. To the committee members, we still have got some work to finalize. We've got the minutes, and then we close the meeting and allow me to go and prepare for the yes, thank you very much. All right. But remember, let's just finalize. I don't think it's going to be a quick one, especially if you have read the minutes. You know, to make this work very easy. I'm sure you've read the minutes. Because the minutes are calculated on time. Shall we quickly look at the minutes? I'm looking at the minutes of the 30th of August. Page 1. I take it that you've read the minutes, so shall we then look at the correction? Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Any corrections? Right, honourable members, if there are no questions, shall we, is that a question?
On paragraph 3, page 2, line 1, 2, 3, 5, it's that committee further updates the service of the South Africa Commission and so clarity on the appropriate general account paragraph. I think we should separate those two because reading it, it suggests that the mineral cover deductions were in relation to the post office. In fact, it was related to the Department of Social Development, SAFA, to be specific. So let's separate that.
Okay, let's fetch fine. Corrections, okay. See, on page 2, paragraph 2.1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think it's line number 5, the committee was off further off. I'd like us to correct it. Yeah, I removed that, yeah. And then, okay, yeah, I think that's all. Any proposal for adoption? Honourable Member Lovanda? And then Honourable Member Lowe. All right. The second document, set of minutes, 31st. Also, this one, the assumption is that the Honourable Member read because the minutes are circulated on time. So we look at the correctness of the minutes on page 1. Page 2. Page 3, page 4.
proposal for adoption. Honorable Member Shumle Manana proposes, and Honorable Member Eni Lekonda. Honorable Member Shortest. Thank you very much. And then all right, okay, we have now considered the 2 minutes. And then just to check with the honorable members if I am correct to say that we have adopted the third term program of the Standing Committee on Appropriations, because I know last time we discussed a draft, and then the committee adopted. Okay, so this is no longer a draft, it's now a program.
Yeah.
Okay, so we will then be guided by the program, and also your availability here will be of significance. Great significance, because then we will also be able to make progress and the work on the change. On our members, we are now on the item number 6, closing remarks, Chairperson. Thank you very much. The meeting, yes, madam.
Before you close, I just want to ask you, in connection with the training of Bloemfontein, have we finalized that workshop of the APEX thing?
Okay.
Yes.
I have a meeting. No. We have a meeting with the Chairperson. So I have a meeting after this one with the with Mr. Frolic.
Okay.
Yes. Because we have an appointment to meet to discuss our training. Honourable Dr. Hick.
Yes. Thank you. Also, question. I noticed that last week, next week the last plenary for the third term. Is it going to affect our program in any way? Just a question.
Honorable Chodaka?
I will just confirm that I think I saw something like committee oversight week from yes.
From Wednesday. Yeah. The last plenary is on Tuesday, and then Wednesday on still the week that ends the 23rd of September is committee for oversight week. So according to our committee program, we'll be doing hearing on the expenditure, and then just the APEC for now, pending on whether it's approved by the past chair.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned. Thanks for your participation. And then the procedure is